Radio Prague News.
Miloš Zeman's team are to announce details of TV debates ahead of the second round of presidential elections. The South Moravian region says a new main rail station in Brno should be built near the river. And Ester Ledecká is set to become the first Czech to represent her country in snowboarding and downhill skiing at the Olympics. Incumbent Miloš Zeman's team will provide details on Tuesday regarding TV debates ahead of the second round of voting in the Czech presidential elections, his spokesman said. Mr. Zeman refused to hold public discussions with other candidates prior to the first round. However, he said after Saturday's vote count that he would be glad to meet his challenger, Jiří Drahoš, face to face. Mr. Zeman suggested the ideal number of debates would be two, and his spokesman said on Twitter on Monday that campaigns should be about opinions, and that was how the president's camp would proceed. Mr. Zeman received 38.6% in the first round. Mr. Drahoš got 28.6%, but has the backing of a number of defeated first-round candidates. The second round takes place on January 26th and 27th. Representatives of the South Moravian region say a new main railway station should be built near the river in Brno. Explaining the decision announced on Monday, they said it would be possible to use EU money in that location and that it could be built there sooner than in the centre of the Moravian capital. As a second possibility, they suggested location close to the current station. The regional politician's decision will serve as a recommendation for the government, who will decide on the matter. The Brno city authorities are also due to choose a proposed location for the project, which has been discussed for many years. The case of jailed Dr. Jaroslav Barták has to be reopened after the Supreme Court accepted an appeal that he lodged, the Czech news agency reported on Monday. Mr. Barták was already serving a 12-year prison term for the sexual abuse of female assistants when he was handed 8 more years for planning 3 murders and blackmail while behind bars. However, the basis for the court's decision to reopen the case is not yet clear. The reasoning will only be revealed when a regional court delivers the Supreme Court's decision to participants in the hearing. 7 senior state and church representatives unlocked the chamber that holds the Czech crown jewels on Monday. The valuable treasures, which are among the symbols of Czech statehood, are only removed from the chamber in Prague's St. Vitus Cathedral on special occasions. From Tuesday, they'll be on display at the Vladislav Hall at Prague Castle as part of an exhibition entitled Founded 1918, marking the centenary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia. Ester Ledecká will become the first Czech to represent her country in both snowboarding and downhill skiing at the Winter Olympics in South Korea next month. The 22-year-old is regarded as one of the favourites in the snowboard parallel giant slalom, in which she dominates in the Sports World Cup. The weather forecast: it should be partly overcast with snow in places in the Czech Republic on Tuesday. Temperatures of up to 2 degrees Celsius are expected. Similar weather is due throughout the week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news. Hello there, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, Miloš Zeman and Jiří Drahoš will face off for the post of Czech president at the end of next week. Suggestions that funding for forestry projects in the Czech Republic has been far too generous. And we meet Jiří Šiftář, a Czech whose photos of London have helped make him massive on the photo-sharing service Instagram. All that's coming up in today's programme. Czechs went to the polls for the first round of presidential elections at the weekend, choosing among 9 candidates, including the incumbent Miloš Zeman. Opinion polls had repeatedly suggested that both Mr. Zeman and scientist Jiří Drahoš would advance to a second round runoff. As it turned out, those polls were right. Jan Wellinger has more.
President Miloš Zeman had appeared tired at press conferences last month, but was clearly reinvigorated on Saturday when the first round of the election was called, leaving him in first place with 38.6% of the vote compared to 26.6% for Mr. Drahoš. The president first thanked his wife and then had a message for his voters in 2 weeks' time.
If they want to see me re-elected, I'd like to call on my voters to come out for me again in the second round and to take along anyone with them, their friends, their family, their lovers, basically anyone with the right to vote.
The president, however, signalled a major pivot in his campaign, accepting the challenge to face his rival in a televised debate, something he refused to do before. In the first round, he declined to take part in any of the debates against the field of eight. Jiří Drahoš's fairly strong second-place finish appears to have changed the game, though. The president, political analysts suggested, realized that to consolidate his position, debates would now be necessary. Indeed, it's lost on few that they could be greatly to the incumbent's benefit. A shrewd and experienced debater, Mr. Zeman, shredded his opponents Jan Fischer and Karel Schwarzenberg in the previous election. He could use the opportunity to regain the jump on Drahoš, who appears to have certain momentum now. Here's what the president said.
I'm still young and full of strength and energy, and discussion is something I enjoy.
Many political commentators have suggested that Mr. Zeman could present a minefield for the chemist and academician Drahoš, but the candidate himself made clear he would not shy away or cower from anyone. His supporters are confident he could turn even a less polished delivery into a plus, and that even a draw could at this point be enough if he presents a cultivated, calm and serious alternative. Even more importantly, from his perspective, Mr. Drahoš theoretically stands to benefit from support from a grouping of other candidates who finished in third to sixth position at the weekend and together received well over 1 million votes. Pavel Fischer, Michal Horáček, Marek Hilscher and Mirek Topolánek all backed Drahoš over Zeman in the second round, and betting agencies are now giving the challenger slightly better odds than Mr. Zeman to win. Of course, that could still change. Jiří Drahoš on Sunday, in an interview for Czech Radio's flagship Radio Journal, made clear he was concerned about possible shenanigans and even that Russian intelligence could try and somehow influence the election in Mr. Zeman's favor. Mr. Zeman's pro-Russian stance is well known, and it's no secret which candidate Moscow would prefer as the winner. Here's what Mr. Drahoš said.
Myslím si to stále. Já jsem přesvědčen o tom, že
I'm convinced it would be in the interest for certain foreign services, not least the Russians, for Zeman to remain president. I can't prove it, of course, but its annual report, even the Czech counterintelligence BIS, allowed that could be the case.
The second round of the presidential election takes place on January 26th and 27th.
That report is by Jan Wellinger. The Czech Republic spending watchdog has roundly criticised the way state and European funds were used in connection with different projects to maintain and improve the country's forests. It found that in many cases, there were no real attempts to make sure that tens of millions of crowns were spent getting the best value for money. Chris Johnstone reports.
Money grows on trees is not just a phrase. In the Czech Republic, it appears a reality. This time round, the spending watchdog, the Supreme Audit Office, focused on spending on forests over a five-year time frame between 2011 and 2016. Forests cover over a third of the Czech Republic, and the forestry business is a big money spinner, with both state, private and local council forestry companies involved. A large amount of Czech timber is exported abroad, mostly to Germany and Austria. And the forests are also a much beloved and valuable leisure and environment resource for many Czechs, with their management therefore a sensitive topic. The programmes investigated by the watchdog were both those administered nationally by the Ministry of Agriculture and the State Agricultural Intervention Fund, and those flowing from European funding, such as the programme for the development of the countryside. Altogether, the watchdog examined a series of projects with a total value of 230 million crowns to get a grasp of the wider picture. And the Supreme Audit Office found that while high priority appeared to be given to drawing a maximum of the funds on offer, value for money appeared very much a secondary consideration. Jiří Kalvoda is one of the board members of the Supreme Audit Office, whose responsibility includes managing some of the audits carried out. He described in an interview on the Watchdog's web pages some of the flaws in forestry spending programmes that were discovered.
The Ministry
Ministry of Agriculture structured it in such a way that the maximum amount of funds were used, but it did not establish any limits, any ceilings on the spending, and it also allowed 100% financing of projects. That meant that those who benefited from the funding did not have to resort to their own finances at all.
The watchdog found large differences in spending within the same projects. For example, the costs of an observation post for watching forestry birds and animals ranged from just under 300,000 crowns to 350,000 crowns. And there were even differences when other examples of spending were examined. Jiří Kalvoda again.
Significant spending differences were found in the reconstruction costs of forest paths. When no limit on spending was set, the cost was found to be 13,000 crowns per meter. When a limit was imposed, the cost for repairing those paths came in at 3,000 crowns a meter.
In this case, the reconstruction costs were in the same locality and the money was paid out to the same beneficiary. And the watchdog found other flaws in the management as well. When money was spent on repairing forests severely damaged by high winds or other natural disasters, there was no obligation to provide photographs or put a price on the costs of the initial damages. It also found one ministry programme flopped altogether. The project was originally supposed to result in 37,000 hectares of new trees being planted, but there were eventually just 21 demands made for funding and just 1,500 hectares of new root forest.
And that report is by Chris Johnstone. Now, I was in London on a reporting assignment for Radio Prague before Christmas and met a number of noteworthy Czechs in the UK capital. Among them was the successful amateur photographer Jiří Šiftář, and he's my guest now in this week's edition of One on One. More than a quarter of a million followers, Jiří Šiftář must be one of the most popular Czechs on Instagram. Going by the name Jira on the photograph sharing service, he's mainly known for stunning pictures of his adopted home of London. I met Jiří Šiftář at a restaurant in the city near his workplace at Lloyds Bank, where he designs web interfaces for customers. And I first asked him whether he'd been into photography as a child.
Yes, that's a funny thing, because in communist times, as we call it now, there was very limited amount of hobbies one could pick. Photography was one of them, because East Germany was producing some kind of, I guess, some knockoffs of DSLRs, not DSLRs, SLRs back then. My dad was quite interested in photography, and so he got me a Russian two-lens knockoff of Flexaret called Lubitel. I was about 6 years old when I first tried to take some pictures, and then in my dad's dark room to develop the film and pictures. It was really magical and exciting back then.
Tell us about your early days in the UK. Why exactly did you come here?
It was really to challenge myself. I was kind of fed up with atmosphere in 90s in Czech. It was little bit of wilderness. I wanted to try different culture, different approach, different relationships with people, based on something more traditional, maybe. Some country with long-standing history of democracy, if I say it this way. But basically to challenge myself, to see if I can do that.
And England hasn't let you down?
Absolutely not. I'm really happy that I did that step, and I feel only sorry that I didn't do that earlier, to be honest.
What exactly do you do? Because I looked at your profile online, and as somebody who doesn't know much about design, I couldn't quite understand it.
Well, yeah, it doesn't have that much tradition, but it's picking up in Czech as well. It's in general, it's called user experience design. It's designing mostly digital products, but it could be even a fridge or washing machine in the end. And it's all about how we interact with those devices. Put it simple way, I'm the advocate for customer, for the user, when it comes to designing products. And I take their view, and I'm trying to help design those products in a way that it's very simple to use, very easy to understand. For anybody, you will make less errors when using these things, and you will actually feel delightful and delighted. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
The main reason I wanted to speak to you is because you're absolutely huge on Instagram with over 250,000 followers. How have you achieved that?
I got that question many times, and every time I have to give quite a disappointing answer. Just hard work. There was no magic, there was no trick. I've never been a suggested user, for example. I only got followers through my pictures. First 3 years, I was lucky, because in those times, exposure page, or explore page, how it's been called back then, was displaying around 400 most popular pictures at that given moment. And because there wasn't that many people on Instagram posting amazing pictures, and I was lucky enough to get on that page with almost every picture I posted, and that was bringing me lots of organic followers, people who really wanted to follow me for my pictures. And they didn't know me, but they liked those pictures, and it was growing for years, slowly but steadily. So yeah, I reached 250,000.
What has been your single most popular photo?
It was probably some picture of Big Ben, I guess, or something very iconic in London. And I must admit, I probably put some fake snowflakes over it. And it probably took people's hearts, and they were very, very happy with that picture, so they expressed it in looks.
Is there a particular kind of photo or subject matter that just works on Instagram that people like?
There's really many ways how to get people's attention. There's lots of niche areas where you can find audience. So it's really, there's no general rule. But if you're moving on with photography and you don't want to do something specific like portraits or bikes or whatever, if you're really into kind of places, then my recipe is always try to depict the place in a way that people will imagine themselves in that place, because that's what ignites the imagination in them, and that's the feeling they're probably looking for, and they're like, at least for me it works.
What kind of camera do you use?
I've been using DSLR quite early in the days, I would say 4 or 5 years back. So I don't know if it's a product placement if I say the brand. You can always cut it out. So yeah, currently I'm using Nikon D810, quite advanced model. I'm also using mirrorless Fuji, now a little bit older but still pretty good. And sometimes I'm still taking shots on my iPhone.
And how much of the final product comes from the actual photo you take out in the field, and how much is post-production?
I would say it's probably 50-50. You have to spot the right angle, you have to find the right composition when you're there. That's something you can't really avoid, or you can't go without that. You have to take a good picture. But still, that picture might be quite blunt in terms of colors and dynamics. And yeah, I always love the process of editing on actually on the phone. Lately, I'm editing on computer in Lightroom, because it's a really powerful tool. But yes, if you want picture to really stand out and be very eye candy, you definitely need to do something post.
Looking through your photos, you have so many wonderful pictures from London, of parks and other spots. Have you learned a lot about London from going out and looking for such pretty places?
Absolutely. I can recommend this as a way to get to know London. I know many people who lived in London for many years, and they never seen the places I visited or I depict in my pictures, because they have no reason to discover them. The camera gave me the reason. The first 3 or 4 years in London, I've been basically out every weekend with my camera, hunting the new places and pictures.
Also, I presume the fact that London is so internationally popular and loved, that must also really help you.
It was definitely a boost. Before, I lived 4.5 years in Poole, which is in Dorset. It's on the coast, it has sea and lots of beautiful places. But when I moved to London and I started posting London on Instagram, it was definitely a huge boost and a huge interest for my audience.
Is what you do in any way sponsored by companies, or is there any kind of commercial aspect like that?
That totally caught us by surprise, I can tell, because I was on Instagram from day one, which was in 2010, and first commercial offers start coming in 2012, actually about a few months after I moved to London, and it was surprising. We didn't expect it. The social media marketing didn't exist that much before, or at least it wasn't that visible or accessible to everyone. And yes, since then it took really, really new heights, and I've been approached by many, many companies, asked to do lots of different campaigns, but I was always taking it as a great opportunity to visit new places and do something I wouldn't be able to do without those opportunities.
And in concrete terms, how does that work? Will they pay for you to go somewhere, or do they want product placement, or how exactly does it work?
The types of corporations are very different, but yes, in the first years it was mostly, we will take you to some beautiful place, you will have really nice experience, and if you will post something from that, we will be happy, and please use this hashtag. Simple as that. In London, because it's really full of opportunities and companies and brands, also there was some other type of deals where they wanted me to attend events, for example, and promote some particular products or things. I wasn't always happy, and I turned down a lot of these kind of deals to simply promote something which I didn't believe into. If it was something I really loved and I was happy to use, it was a no-brainer for me. So yeah, that's a lot of sorts of different deals there.
Have you published many photos from the Czech Republic, and what kind of reaction do they get?
That's I feel a little bit bad about this, because during my time in England and my, let's say, Instagram fame, I visited Czech Republic and Prague specifically a few times, but I never posted that many pictures from there. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't want to explain exactly my feelings towards New Prague now, how it's been refurbished and kind of redecorated. It's not exactly my style. I think that something has been kind of covered with the new paint in Prague. It's missing that kind of old vintage style or vibe for me. So yeah, I didn't post that much.
Why is your Instagram name Yira? I presume it comes from Yiri in some way.
In early 90s, when all the internet things started, we all had to come up with some nickname for all these internet discussion forums and services. And yeah, for a few years it was kind of a funny thing to transcribe your name, which was Yira, my friends called me Yira, to try to put it in kind of English spelling. So that's how it happened. I only learned much, much later that Jira, in exactly this spelling, is some sort of Indian cumin.
I was just thinking also on my way to meet you here today that you are probably unusual for a Czech. Any Czech living in the UK will have maybe trouble with their name, but you have not one, but three Hacheks in your name. What do people call you here? Or how do they pronounce your name here, Robert?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. I basically had to give up on all diacritics in my name. So when people read it, they basically end up saying Jiri Siftar.
And I was speaking there to Jiri Siftar, a Czech who's huge on Instagram. And we'll have several more interviews from London for you in this slot in the weeks to come. Now, here's Chris Johnstone. He has the latest part of our series, Hit of the Century.
Hit of the Century.
100 hits and 100 songs that went down in history of Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic as songs that Czechs will happily sing along to. Which song do you, our listeners, like the best? We're curious to know how you'll vote on our webpage, www.radio.cz. Today, we travel back to the year 1923, and to give it a framework, here are a few of the historical dates that marked that year. January 5th marks the assassination of Finance Minister Alois Rašín. He died on February the 18th. On May the 18th, the regular radio broadcasting was launched in Czechoslovakia. Its operator was Radio Journal. Czechoslovakia had thus become the second country in Europe to have a regular radio programme after the UK and the famous BBC. And in 1923, the Czechoslovak state airline was established. In the early 1920s, after the stormy post-war boom, the cabaret business began to take hold in Czechoslovakia. One subsequent disadvantage was the combination of cabaret and restaurants. For example, admission to the renowned Red Seven Cabaret, which we've already talked about in past broadcasts, was not expensive. But what was expensive was the wine and the food. The owner of Hotel Central on Hybernská Street in Prague, who rented out a room to the cabaret, blatantly profited from this. Things were not going well even in the wine cellar of Prague Municipal House. The partnership eventually collapsed. In 1923, one of the last songs by the founder of the Red Seven Cabaret group, Jiri Červený, was penned. "Mr. Bandleader, Play Me Mine." It became not only a hit, but also a sort of representation of the life of the cabaretier, who is eventually left with nothing but a track and the world of austere paragraphs. Here we also hear a sigh from Jiri Červený, who says that all human life is just a game. A popular song which is still played successfully in the Czech Republic at folk dances and balls, sung to us by Oldřich Kovár.
Jenom svým vidinám, podíval jsem tak sám a sám nad město večer do sadu, prožít svou snivou náladu. Večer mne líbal na čelo, srdce mne trochu bolelo, do malého sputí šel jsem pak rád, abych zaslyšel hudbu hrát. Pane kapelníku, hrajte mi tu moji starou píseň zamilovanou. Když ta píseň zní, tu mé srdce sní, že je celý život lidský pouze hrou. Kapelníku, hrajte mi tu moji starou píseň zamilovanou. Když ta píseň zní, tu mé srdce sní, že je celý život lidský pouze hrou.
That was Chris Johnstone with another song in our series Hit of the Century. But that's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague. From me, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at the station, thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.